not your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and a warm welcome back to author David McGraney, who wrote the book, You Are Not So Smart. Ladies and gentlemen, go to youarenotsosmart.com. You can also get the book at amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, iTunes, and Books A Million. Welcome back, David.
Hey, thank you.
Boy, you know, you have quite a grasp for this. We've been talking, of course, off the air during the break and so forth. But you were talking about differing people with differing cultures and so forth. It gets very difficult for us to perceive this thing called reality in the same way, does it not?
Yeah, I would say that based off the last 50 or so years of research into neuroscience, psychology, and even things like behavioral economics, stuff like that, economic theory, that it's pretty evident from the science, the opinion of science is that we're pretty bad at determining objective reality. Like there is an objective reality out there, but human beings are limited by not only our senses, but also by the framework of the mind itself, the way it's built biologically and the way it organizes itself. There's something as simple as change blindness, and inattentional blindness can point that out to us. We tend to believe that we're always getting all the information from the world into our minds through our eyeballs. 100% of the information is going in there, and we have this like perfect record of what's going on around us. But there's a study, and you can actually go on YouTube and find this. Just look up change blindness or inattentional blindness, and you can see where, for instance, they'll have people, they'll ask them to watch how many times they pass a basketball back and forth between a group of like five different people. And you're asked to count how many times they pass the basketball. And then at the end of about 2 minutes of this, you'll have a number, and then you'll write out the number and you'll pass it to the researcher. And then they'll ask, okay, that really wasn't what the point of the study was. Did you recognize anything strange about the video? And usually about a third, sometimes up to a half of the people who watch it will go, no, I didn't see anything weird. And what they miss is that in the middle of that video, while people are passing the basketball around, a guy in a gorilla suit, or sometimes in a bear suit, has walked into the center of the frame, waved at the camera, and then walked back out again. And
well, that's cool.
And so about a third, or sometimes up to a half of the people who watch it, never see that, but that's not how we remember experiencing the world. We would, if we told someone that it happened to them, they would never believe us. They would never say that, because they're like, I was watching the whole time. And I think I would know if something like that happened, but yet we'd still rely on things like eyewitness testimony. Or,
we still
look back on our lives as if we had have a perfect record of everything that's happened to us. But even right now, in the middle of this conversation or throughout your entire day, you have missed far more things than you've paid attention to. And the reality that we believe that we're experiencing is not the actual 100% one-to-one reality that's actually out there, not even amongst other people.
So
yeah, eyewitness testimony, that was huge because, you know, people have been executed based on eyewitness testimony. And
yeah. I write
four people watching a car accident will all give you four different renditions.
Exactly. That's what I write about in the book, and I go a little bit deeper into it. And if anyone wants to do their own research, you can just look up Elizabeth Loftus. She's the the leading researchers into how faulty our memory is. And like you were saying, she did a study where they had people watch a car accident on a videotape, and then they asked them to estimate how fast the cars were going, but they would use a different word each time. They would say how fast were the cars going when they smashed into each other. They would say how fast were the cars going when they bumped each other. And depending on the intensity of the verb, people would change their estimate of how fast the cars were going. But they, even creepier than that, they would have people watch a videotape of a robbery, and then they would sit them down with a book of mug shots and ask them to just thumb through and see if any of these mug shots seem familiar to you. And then they would put them let them watch a lineup, and 70 or so, it was something around 70% of the people would pick one of the people out of the lineup, but the person and none of the people in the lineup were actually in the video. But they were in the book of mugshots. So the people were put in a situation where they were asked to pick someone out of the lineup. They searched their memory for anything that matched any of the people, and they remembered the mugshot. But when you go back one more level to the memory of the actual event, the person wasn't there. But they don't have a memory of that. They actually they reinterpreted their memory to match the situation they were in. So it's depending on memory is a very dangerous thing, and having this confidence in our perfect perceptions and our perfect logic is a really dangerous thing.
You know, David, I've gotten to the point now when I retell a story from my childhood or my past, I say, to the best of my memory and recollection, because I know I have altered some of my long-term memories.
I know that's true, and I can tell you that I've been in a situation where I've told a story at a party about something that happened to me, and I'll get about halfway through it, and one of my friends has said to me before, that didn't happen to you. I know it didn't happen to you because it happened to me. And so,
right.
You know,
that's pretty good, Dave.
I've stolen other people's stories and made them my stories.
Yes.
Hey, there's
because
some good ones out there.
But, David, is it not that our minds also, like when we're being told a story, we claim it. It becomes our own. And, you know, there's some sort of meshing of the psyche that goes on there that, yeah, you know, that you know, someone tells you a really good story, it becomes your own. So I preface everything I say now about the past. I say, you know, to the best of my recollection or... Yeah,
that's why we have a written Constitution and Declaration of Independence. It's written writing, right?
Yeah, but you know, it's it can be interpreted any way you want. You know, that's the thing.
I love the word creator.
Hey,
David, what about the word creator in the Declaration of Independence? Right. For example, a Christian will see, you know, perhaps God. A Muslim perhaps will see Allah. An evolutionist perhaps will see Mother Earth. You know, an atheist will say, well. We'll see science, but that very word creator, we can all project our own, you know.
It's true. You know,
meaning.
We see the world through these rosy, filtered glasses of our own belief systems. And we interpret, and we have this weird, tendency to think everyone else sees the world the way we see it. And when we get confronted with opposing viewpoints or with contradictory evidence, it throws us for such a loop. That it actually physically change. You can, if you put someone in an MRI machine, and they actually look at a scan of their brain, and you present them with evidence that goes contrary to their belief system, you can actually watch the blood flow to the frontal cortex diminish. People's brains will actually shut down as if they're confronted with contradictory evidence or things that conflict with their belief systems, and we're built that way. And we don't completely understand why we do that. It probably falls into maintaining our self-esteem models, but we can predict that people will act that way.
Well, and I don't mean
it. It's to maintain that false self, that self-esteem model. That's it, isn't it?
Well,
that
could
so.
Be. Yeah.
Okay,
well,
we've got to take a break here. Hey,
about.
We're going to open up the phones, 1-800-259-5791. And you can come back. Is that okay, David? Take some calls?
Sure.
Okay, 1-800-259-5791. We'll be right back.
George Washington said, "Government is not reason, it is not eloquence, it is force, like fire. It is a dangerous servant and a fearful master." America's government is no longer the servant of the people and the protector of our liberty, but has become that fearful master. We the people must understand the nature of this government gone awry if we are to be successful in saving our country. America is being deliberately destroyed by a cabal of international gangsters so that she can be forced into subjugation to a one-world government. The God-given, unalienable rights of the Declaration of Independence are in jeopardy. We must not let them be stolen by ambitious and evil men. Utopia Silver Supplements believes it is our God-given right to make our own health care decisions however we deem best. If we can help you with your supplement needs and better health, then help us win this health freedom battle. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's UTOPIASilver.com or call 888-213-4338. Again, 888-213-4338.
Nick Wadino with Midas Resources. If you have an IRA or 401k, did you know you can turn that nest egg into a physical gold and silver nest egg? Do you know what kind of specific precious metals are allowed by law to be in retirement accounts? Did you know that you can take physical delivery of these precious metals? Would you like to know more? It's a fact. Stocks and mutual funds have been a wild ride, and many people's retirement funds have taken large hits. If you put $100,000 in gold in January of 2009, it would be worth over $200,000 today. If you put $100,000 in silver, then it would be worth over $300,000 today. As bailouts for banks and the seemingly endless printing of money continues worldwide, the value of the dollar could decline further, in turn possibly pushing gold and silver much, much higher. Protect what you work so hard for. Call me, Nick Wadena, 1-800-686-2237, extension 343, and learn what your options are. Again, that's 1-800-686-2237, extension 343. Once again, 1-800-686-2237, extension 343.
From the shattered Rust Belt come the Lost Vegas.
Now, also available in digital format at Amazon and iTunes worldwide.
Don't come calling when you all start falling down.
Life Before the Collapse by the Las Vegas on 180-gram vinyl and mastered especially for vinyl by legendary audio engineer Steve Hall. Life Before the Collapse by the Las Vegas.
The Las Vegas.
Now available at Amazon.com.
And iTunes.
Smokers, are you still smoking traditional cigarettes? Are you still smelling up your clothes and car interior, staining your teeth, and getting ashes everywhere? Why? When you can be smoking or vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replacement cartridges, you'll get all the satisfaction of smoking, but no smoking hazards. Choose from a wide variety of our new American-made Vapriate e-liquid flavors at LeCig.com, spelled L-E-C-I-G.com, or call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker. Warning, e-cigs may contain nicotine, an addictive substance known to the state of California to cause birth defects or cancer. Please be aware of the risks associated with e-cigs prior to use. You must be 18 years or older to purchase.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and a warm welcome back to David McGraney, blogger and author of You Are Not So Smart. Ladies and gentlemen, go to youarenotsosmart.com for a fascinating book. And David, you were over the break, you were talking a little bit about your thoughts about why people do argue online.
Something I wanted to mention, the research of a psychologist named is Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T. He's a brilliant psychologist, brilliant researcher, and he has a book coming out, I think, in a year or maybe 2 years from now. And he's his research is based off this idea of something called, he calls the moral matrix, in the sense that there's sort of this reality bubble that is formed from the morality bedrock that you stand on top of and that you see reality through, that it's difficult to accept that when another person sees the world so differently from you, it's so difficult to understand why. And he posits that it has to do with that they're fundamentally understanding the world from a different reality bubble than you are, based off of five moral sliders. And it gets complicated, but he asks questions like, would you be willing to clean a toilet, a dirty toilet, with an American flag? Now, for some people, you don't even have to think about it. Some people go, oh, that's terrible. That's how could you disgrace the flag and what it means and all this stuff. And then for some people, they're like, who cares? It's a piece of cloth. You know, the ideas are bigger than that. We shouldn't get caught up in worrying about symbols. We should worry more about this, and this. And it's absolutely impossible for those two people to agree on that one thing. And there, he actually offers hundreds of examples like that. And those are the fundamental basis of how we see reality, and we can't get rid of them. We can't see them from any other direction. And so those things are also what determine what camp you fall into. Are you a liberal? Are you a conservative? Are you Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, whatever? That stuff is determined way back, way deeper, and it has very little to do with your rational, logical, methodical exploration of the data. It has more to do with your gut emotional response to things like fairness and authority, reciprocity, stuff like that. So I highly recommend looking into it, and that's going to a lot of that. I'm going to do a lot of research into that on my next project.
Right, you know, we're talking about brainwashing, mindwashing in many aspects of this, whether it's advertising or whatever, or political statements or whatever. How do you address those kinds of concepts and ideas?
Well, I'm from the standpoint of people do most of the work. Like, you don't have to do very much work. People will follow the and brainwash, quote unquote, themselves through confirmation bias, backfire effect, hindsight bias, and other things. We're so keyed in on trying to maintain a high self-esteem, and we decide what that self-esteem model is based off of what we think keeps us maintaining a high status in our in-group. So let's say it's we feel that being moral is very important, or we feel that being attractive is very important, or we feel that being intellectual is very important. A person who believes that they are that they get social capital out of presenting themselves as being intelligent is the kind of person who is going to be more likely to build up their self-esteem through displays of their intelligence. So this is the kind of person who's going to be in the chess club, this kind of person who's going to take Latin, this kind of person who's going to read magazines and books that signal to other people that they're an intelligent person. So if you're going to market to that person, if you're going to try to persuade that person, then you will need to persuade them using tactics that play into that self-esteem, so that you will say, you should buy my product because smart people buy my product, and don't you want to be a smart person, you know, that kind of thing. And the weird thing about that is that's something that's been well understood by advertising for a long time, and that, you know, that's part of, that's one of the techniques that they use to sell things to us. But in the modern era, they're actually trying something now where you can, when they identify you as the user of your computer or your smartphone or whatever, they are targeting ads at you not just based off your past purchases. Say you're the kind of person who is, if you buy a tent, you might also be the kind of person who buys an axe. And you might also be the kind of person who needs to buy some survival gear and a backpack because you're obviously an outdoors person. But they will also go farther than that now. They will present to you appeal to your emotions, and they'll try an ad that harkens back to when you camped out with your parents, and they'll try an ad that appeals to your intelligence, and that shows you this is the best equipment on the market, and so forth and so on. And they'll see what marketing technique works best on you, and they'll start using different techniques, not just showing you different products, based off the kind of things that are more likely to persuade you. And they'll actually build a persuasion model based off the kind of things you tend to fall for.
That's complex.
it's crazy.
And I'm sure it's going to get even more complex the more we learn and the more they learn.
It's a never-ending arms race, definitely. And, you know, knowing yourself and knowing that that's how the how persuasion works is an important tool you need to have in your toolbox, I think.
Can we get to know ourselves, really?
A lot of what I write about, and I didn't really know that this was a major theory in psychology until I realized I had been writing about it for a while, but it's called self-perception theory. And it is there's a wing of psychology that many, many scientists are part of this wing of psychology, and many people are researching this today. There are researchers who are working on it. It says you really can't know yourself, that there's a certain level, there's a certain point where you go into the black box and you can't know anything beyond that point. And it's called self-perception theory. And it goes back to the beginning of psychology even, but the idea is that you observe your behaviors as if you were in an audience observing your behaviors. And since if you watch someone do something on stage, you really don't know why they're doing it. You know, if I look at someone across a restaurant and I see them doing something, I don't really know why they're doing it. But I come up with a theory and I come up with a sort of a reasonable explanation for it that matches my observations in the past and so on. And that's what we do with ourselves. So let's say you were a simple example would be, let's say that you were you see a cricket on your arm and then you jump around and you wipe it off and you freak out about it and you scream, that later on you would assume that you have a fear of crickets because you're looking at your behavior and you're trying to explain it to yourself. And there might be something deeper behind that, not just crickets itself. That goes back to the sort of the Benjamin Franklin thing. People, they'll put pencils in their mouths, and there's a study where you can hold the pencil in your lips or hold it in your teeth. If you hold it in your lips, you kind of make a frown. If you hold it in your teeth, you kind of make a smile. And they show them pictures. They show them cartoons, comic strips. And if they're holding the pencil in their teeth and they're smiling, then they'll rate those comics as being funnier than the ones when they were holding them in their lips and they were frowning, because they're looking back on their own face and trying to explain why they were doing that. I guess I was doing that because I think it's funny. So, yeah, it's very difficult to understand yourself.
And listening to your thoughts, we can talk about that when we come back a little bit, how hard that is.
Or looking at your thoughts. Hey, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes here. Hang in there with us.
And I have found my feet 257 weeks. But you could be waiting for a day that won't come.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. Did you know that the global elite are now storing non-hybrid seeds in secret storage vaults near the Arctic Circle? Did you know that in a real meltdown, non-hybrid seeds can become more valuable than silver or gold? It's true, seeds have outperformed even gold and silver before in this country, and it's possible that it could even happen again. So our friends at Solutions from Science have put together the perfect mix of non-hybrid seeds. They call it a survival seed bank, and it can produce an endless supply of nutrient-dense food for you and your family. And here's the best part. These seeds have not been genetically modified in any way, and you actually get enough seeds to plant a full-acre crisis garden. So visit them today at survivalseedbank.com. That's survivalseedbank.com, or give them a call at 877-327-0365. That's 877-327-0365. Remember, in a real crisis, non-hybrid seeds are the ultimate barter item. This is Alex Jones for survivalseedbank.com.
You have storable food, filtered water, even shelter, but do you have a way to start a fire immediately? Now you can with InstaFire, a revolutionary, safe, simple, and versatile fire starter. InstaFire is a patented blend of volcanic rock, wood pellets, and paraffin wax that gets a fire blazing in just minutes. So just add water to your survival food and enjoy a hot meal in no time. InstaFire is self-sustaining fire and even starts right on top of snow or water or in any severe weather, even 40-mile-per-hour crosswinds. Sound incredible? It is. Check it out at InstaFire.com. A must for any preparedness kit, InstaFire easily lights with matches or flintlock lighters, is environmentally friendly, stores easy with a 30-year shelf life, is lightweight, comes in a variety of sizes, and starts at $1.25 for a single pack, or only $59.95 for a 5-gallon pail with free shipping. Go to Instafire.com, spelled Instafire.com, or call 888-482-4868. That's 888-482-4868. Safe, simple, versatile. Instafire.
Dr. Joel Wallach is not your typical doctor. Both a veterinarian and naturopathic physician, Dr. Wallach asked, why does America spend more money on healthcare by far and yet ranks 50th in health and longevity worldwide? The doctor believes that people should be empowered with a basic understanding of nutrition, then take charge of their life to attain optimal health and longevity through nutrition, not by toxic prescription drugs that lead to side effects, requiring more toxic prescription drugs. Talk about being dependent on drug companies, to our own destruction no less. This is clearly a deadly recipe. Doc Wallach's message is resonating with an increasing number of Americans who are waking up to all the government and big pharma manipulation of our healthcare system. I like what Doc Wallach is saying and doing to enlighten people and have joined forces to help this tireless crusader spread his message. Visit GCNminerals.com and listen to Dr. Wallach's Deadly Recipes lecture. It makes a lot of sense, and I invite you to join the GCN Minerals team. Go to GCNminerals.com. That's GCNminerals.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Bucker with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Welcome back to author and blogger David McGraney. Ladies and gentlemen, go to youarenotsosmart.com, the name of the book, and check it out. David, we have a call. We have a caller on the line. We have Travis from Texas. You're live on The Secret Truth.
Hi, David. Enjoying the conversation tonight, and I look forward to checking out your book. I was curious to know if you have had much exposure to the Trivium education.
No, I'm not familiar with that. Could you tell me a little bit more about it?
Yeah, the classical seven liberal arts are comprised of what's called the Trivium and the Quadrivium, and the Trivium is comprised of grammar, Aristotelian logic, and rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And what I find a lot of times is today is that people will put their logic in front of grammar. You know, rather than saying, you know, taking the time to research and learn the who, what, when, where of a subject, they automatically will jump to the why and will put logic in front of grammar. And that's okay. What the Trivium is all about, is pointing out where people, you know, have they jump forward in their decision making.
Yeah, you know, a lot of what you're talking about. You know, the long history of philosophy and just the philosophy of education, the philosophy of knowledge, in human culture. We've had thousands of years of this. We've only had 100 years or so of psychological research where we actually sat down, put this stuff in a lab, started getting data and testing, retesting, and trying to actually quantify all this stuff. But a lot of the original thoughts go way back into the idea that, is this just a symbol for something that has a deeper meaning? How do we know this is the thing as it is? Or is this just the way that we're communicating this idea back and forth? The idea that we're so logical and rational and that we're not really depending on narratives is something that I try to keep coming back to. My favorite study that illustrates this, and this is a great example of something that, like what you're talking about, is an old idea, but that was put under a new lab condition to be researched, was they, there's a study where they had people, they had a department store with four different types of stockings, on display side by side and like on a fake leg. And they had people come in and they would have them, look at the four different types of stockings and touch them, look at them and everything, and then rate which one they thought was the best. And then after, hundreds of people come through there, they look at the results and they see that people basically always pick the one on the right. If there's one, two, three, four, they always pick four. So they bring people in and they ask them, why did you pick number four? And they will say, well, it had the best texture. I had the best, I enjoyed the way it looked. That reminds me of the stockings my mom used to buy. This is, I think it's just quality. They never mentioned that it's number four. And of course the great trick of the study is they're all the same stocking. So people, when they're tasked with coming up with a reason for why they do what they do, when they're tasked with coming up with an explanation for their own behavior, with an explanation for their own self, they'll do it. And that we're always forming those narratives. We're always forming those stories about who we are, why we are, and what we think. And as evidence in that study and many others, it's oftentimes just simply a confabulation. It's just a nice embellishment of the truth that helps us move forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, very cool. Well, I'm going to get a copy of your book, and I would also encourage you to check out the Trivium Education.
I'll do it. Sounds great, man.
All right. Take it easy.
Thank you, Travis, for your call. We appreciate you calling in.
Good deal.
Classical education, the closing of the American mind seemed to come pop up in my head, where the classics and the old liberal arts degrees and so forth, are they emphasized as much as they used to be, or are they just not really in anymore?
Well, the worst thing that ever happened to education in America is rigorous testing and No Child Left Behind. The reason for that is there's so much, when it comes to being a well-rounded, educated person who knows how to think, knows how to teach yourself, knows how to research, a lot of this stuff can't be quantified very well. And if it can't be parsed out into charts and graphs like math and certain types of science reasoning can be, then it doesn't get put into the curriculum because it can't be tested for. So it's very difficult to see if someone understands what are the moral, philosophical and and underpinnings of a story like Frankenstein or a story like Of Mice and Men, and then try to compare and contrast that with modern life and your personal life. Those are things that are very difficult to test on a multiple choice basis and run through a Scantron, and so therefore those things have been really de-emphasized in modern education, at least in modern American education, and that's really terrible. And so, yeah, there's been a lot of de-emphasis on arts, a lot of de-emphasis on literature, and a lot of de-emphasis on certain types of critical science reasoning and education because it's just difficult to test for it. And until we kind of get that hammered out, we're going to probably go through a weird period of time in education.
Right. There are some people that say we're just creating workers for the corporations, that's all, and our schooling system. But I don't think they're that well-schooled anymore, even for that, are they?
I don't know for sure, but I can tell you just anecdotally that it feels that way for sure.
Right. We've had Charlotte Isserby on our program several times, and she really was in the education department, U.S., federal and all that, and she's written some very fine things on education. And she seemed to get back to the Prussian model that we lifted from Prussia, which was a nationalistic model that created a citizen soldier, say.
Well, you can't have.
Go ahead.
I am one of those people. I'm in that camp that believes that you can't have a functioning society unless everybody is really well educated. And not just and certainly not just facts, but with the idea that like I write about in the book something called the Dunning-Kruger effect, and that is the less you know about something, the less you believe there is to know about something. It's that thing where somebody goes from being a novice to an amateur, and they think that only took a couple months, so to become a master is probably only going to take a couple more months. So
it's let's say you're learning how to play guitar, you pick it up and it's very difficult, makes no sense. But after a couple of weeks, you're able to play a song and you're like, wow, that's pretty easy. I guess I can be, Kirk Hammett or Carlos Santana in just a couple of months. But that same weird way of thinking about the world plays into whether or not you feel educated about a subject. So somebody who reads a couple of Wikipedia entries on climate science or reads a couple of Wikipedia entries on the founding fathers or whatever it is that you're reading, it's when you go from novice to amateur in your education, you start to get that false concept that the people out there who we consider the experts are people who've just researched for a little bit more than you have, not people who've devoted their entire life to it. And it's a weird, weird way to see the world that is, I'm seeing more and more prevalent in modern society.
Yeah, and literature has become a burden, frankly, because of the pace of what they've got the children doing. The kids, some of them get up, they start basketball practice at 6:30 in the morning, and they may have a game or some other quiz bowl or science Olympiad or some other obligation that evening. The child won't return home until 9 or later in the evening, and in that whole day, they didn't get to read anything they wanted to read. They had to read what was presented to them and was required.
Yeah.
So when I say a lack of literature, is that there's actually no time.
It's true.
You can read Charles Dickens, those kinds of novels and books. They matter nothing.
Yeah, every teenager should read Catcher in the Rye and realize, hey, guess what? Somebody felt this 40 years ago, and they should read it. It's a good thing to know that people have had the thoughts that you're having at the same time you've had them all throughout history.
Our Great Expectations was a wonderful book, too. Hey, we'll be right back. Thanks for being with us, David. Nobody on the road.
Thomas Jefferson once said, when the people fear their government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. Our God-given right to life and liberty, and the right to determine what is best for our lives and our families' health, are in jeopardy. If we the people do not diligently assert these rights, they may be taken away and lost forever. Utopia Silver is known for fighting for health freedom, and we will not meekly allow ourselves to be led as lambs to the slaughter. Sitting passively by and accepting the chains of slavery that are being placed on America is not an option. Please stand with Utopia Silver in this fight. Utopia Silver carries some of the most effective colloidal silver products on the market and numerous other high-quality health supplements. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's U-T-O-P-I-A, utopiasilver.com. Or call us today at 1-888-213-4338. 1-888-213-4338.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include micro plant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock, save you money, and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Micro plant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
yeah.
How is it that you were able to attract so many people?
I'm a believer, and I'm somebody who's I've worked in journalism for a number of years, and I'm working in new media now. And I noticed that there's a trend. There's this danger when you get to pick
all the news sources that you pull from, when you get to pick all the books and magazines and that you read from, that you can become ensconced in this this alternate reality that's based off of whatever the reality was that you brought to the table, and you're never challenged. And I think that the only way to have epiphanies, the only way to grow as a human being is to constantly be challenged, to constantly ask yourself, am I on the right path? Do I have more to learn about the world? And so I tried to create this project as something that from the very second you see the title of it, you're challenged. You're immediately put into a position where you're having to defend your beliefs, and then you read everything from that perspective, and you're open to the idea that maybe you've got something to learn. Maybe you're deluded in some way.
Yeah, you're right about being challenged. We do have another caller, Richard from Texas. What's your question for David McRaney?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I had a real quick question. Last week it was announced that 539 clergy all decided to go against the 501c3, and they challenged it using the Constitution, saying that they would go with freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and freedom of assembly. And it's been said that a lot of these clergy do not want to get out of the 501c3, but they still want the advantage of standing in the pulpit. So my question is, is there some kind of self-aggrandizing, some type of ego thing going on that's not being focused on with all these clergy that won't get out of the 501c3, but they're taking advantage of their position as being community leaders? In other words, I'm asking, can you break down their psychology collectively? Because there's got to be something going on where these people won't do what God has called them to do, and that is speak against evil. And I'll leave it right there, and I'll take your answer off here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
This is just an educated guess, or maybe it's just a guess, but I would say that whenever you move from individual to an organization, whenever you start thinking about things in terms of institutions, institutions have their own way of going about things, and the institution is always trying to survive. The institution is almost like an insect or a simple animal, and it wants to survive to the next generation by any means necessary. And the members of that organization are going to work toward that goal. So in this specific instance, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I know that if the survival of the entity might require a little bit of that entity going against its original conditions for forming, it might be considered something that is a risk worth taking for the greater good of surviving into the next generation.
Right. Would it be cognitive dissonance of an organization then, but translated by through individuals, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're just people have a really amazing ability to justify their actions and come up with a reason for what they're doing that is it's the whole, you know, would you steal bread to feed your starving children? You know, like, so on any other day you would say stealing bread is wrong, but in that instance you can come up with a justification for it. And task with a reason, with a need for a justification, we will come up with it. And especially if we've got a group of people together who are all sharing shared interests, that justification can be act of coming up with a justification can be greatly enhanced, and it'd be difficult for those people to see outside of that.
Yeah, the 501c corporation, which is the church in America today, you know, I mean, right, that gives them their tax-exempt status. To have such a large number of people step away from that, that is signaling to the group something's wrong, doesn't it? Wouldn't you say that they're trying to initiate a signal to the group that
I think they want freedom for that group of people to express whatever they want, political, religious, or whatever.
Well, theoretically, aren't you supposed to have that, even if you are a 501c or whatever? But to break away from the group benefit of the tax relief, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not completely familiar with that situation, but I would I totally understand the concept that if you feel your freedom to express yourself is being limited by some sort of weird standard that's being placed on you by the culture, then I could totally understand trying to step out of those boundaries.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to. What everybody's doing is trying to limit the church to to keep them away from political thought and pronouncements and activities. That's what they're doing.
Oh, I think it's just the opposite. I think people get their politics from the pulpit.
Well, I mean, you should get your politics from wherever, you know, but you should be able to freely walk in and out of these organizations.
Sure. We get our politics from a deep, my theory is that we get our politics from an even deeper source, and then we move out into our public lives trying to justify that political viewpoint. You know, I think that most people know exactly who they're going to vote for president, you know, months and months in advance. And then, you know, they watch all the debates and they read all the news stories, in a certain way, not to gain more information, but to try to justify the choice they've already made. They'll
select just a few little tidbits that provide a support for their reelecting someone or something, right?
Yeah, I think that it's much more about confirming the way you feel instead of trying to seek out new information. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't want to be challenged because you know, they know it. They're real smart, right? But we all think we're real smart.
Yeah, we're all there's the average person believes they are not. That's the truth. We're all smarter than the average person. We're all better drivers than the average person. We all are we're more talented, better looking.
David, I am definitely the better driver than the average person.
Yeah, and if we're all better drivers,
she drives all over New York, didn't hit anybody.
If we're all better drivers than the average person, then who is the average person?
Yeah. No, those are the ones that have the wreck, the average person. I'm better than that.
Right.
Well, you know, I've always noticed.
So I might be average, too.
I've noticed there's this self-centeredness that we as human beings, it's like a part of our being in the mammalian body, you know? It's like, and I refuse to hold it against people that they are self-centered.
Yeah,
I think it's a survival instinct of the reptilian portion of the brain or the R complex. I don't know.
Yeah, you have to have a healthy dose of self-delusion to get out of bed in the morning. I mean, all the things I write about serve us well in the best of circumstances, but we're just not always in the best of circumstances. I think that we can work to change, and we should, but change is slow going. And I guess my thesis is that in the meantime, let's admit to our faults and let's try to stop making policies and laws and decisions in our personal lives that assume that we're rational and logical beings. And we instead, let's look at how science has predicted our flawed reasoning and use that to outsmart our future selves. Let's sort of childproof our lives the same way we would childproof our home. You know, you don't walk up to a small child and try to explain to them why they shouldn't do things and then expect them to just take that in and do what you say. You also put, you know, a fence around the pool and you put covers over the light sockets and stuff like that, over the power outlets and everything, because you were trying to childproof them against their own predictable bad behaviors. Well, we have also predictable stumbling blocks, predictable biases, predictable bad behaviors, and we can actually outsmart our future selves in the same way. You know, we know we're going to procrastinate. We know that teenagers are not going to abstain from sex. We know people are not going to save for retirement. So we can actually set up a world that takes all that stuff into account.
Yeah, let's talk about that tomorrow, about procrastination. You want to do that?
Yeah, let's put it off till next week.
I think that's a good time to talk about procrastination tomorrow sometime.
Yeah,
David, it was a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Thank
I learned a
much.
Lot. Thank you.
David, I really do appreciate and I feel honored to have you this evening, and we certainly appreciate your time spent with us.
Hey, it was my pleasure. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, David. David McRaney. You're not so smart.
.com.
Thank
Charles,
you, George. Thank you up there. Our engineering was great, as usual. You did a wonderful job. And you had a couple of fine callers coming in.
And thank you to the listening audience.
That's about it.
Yep, thanks, everybody. See you next week.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.